Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Good afternoon and good evening. Welcome to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx Speaker, Business Positioning Strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 74 countries. So if it's the first time listening to us or you've been with us for some time, I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that changed our lives and how we use it to transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live right here on the Blog Talk Radio Network, Tuesday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Do not miss us. And you can subscribe wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, Spotify, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, the Google Play Music app, the Himalaya app, wherever you're listening to podcasts currently, please subscribe to Life Transformation Radio and never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and review and let us know how we are doing. Also, we have a Facebook group, Life Transformation Radio Community, where you can join the group and engage in conversation with the guests that I bring on the show. On the show, they are entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, podcasters, authors, basically amazing human beings that are elevating the world around them. My guest today has done exactly that. If you have any questions for any of the guests during our live broadcast, call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. And with that, please help me welcome to the show my guest for today, Todd Palmer. Todd, welcome to Life Transformation Radio.
Sean, I'm really thrilled to be here today. How have you been?
I'm doing amazing. Thank you for asking. How are you?
You know what? I'm doing very well, and I just consider this an awesome opportunity to connect with people literally around the globe.
Oh, absolutely. And I love what you're doing, and I'm excited because I actually haven't had somebody on here promoting job or promoting that tour or even wrote a book about it. Or, you know, it's mostly entrepreneurs and leave your 9-to-5, but I don't think that entrepreneurship is for everybody. I don't think that just because someone has a hobby or a side hustle or whatever they do just for fun doesn't necessarily mean that they need to do full time. And so we're going to talk about that today and leadership and teamwork and building teams and the whole gamut. So I'm excited to jump into that. Today's episode is titled The Job Search Process with CEO and author Todd Palmer. He is the collaborative business advisor and CEO of Extraordinary Advisors. Simply put, EA helps business leaders get stuff done. As the CEO of a 6-time Inc. 5000 company, Todd knows that business success begins and ends with people. People make all of the business decisions regarding strategy, execution, cash, and staff. Todd isn't happy until his clients trust themselves as leaders and their decisions. He won't rest until teams trust the leaders and each other. He knows they've nailed it when their CEOs and their leadership teams take action towards high-level achievement, resulting in clients that trust the company. Read more sales, more profits, more partnerships. Todd is also the author of the popular book, The Job Search Process, Find and Land a Great Job in 6 Weeks or Less. You can go to his website at extraordinaryadvisors.com. His Facebook link is there, Todd Palmer 13, and on LinkedIn, go to Todd Palmer 1. You can copy that, paste it into the platform, and find him. So with that, I have to ask you, Todd, what is your why? Why do you do what you do?
Well, I'm really glad you started with this question. I was very fortunate nearly a decade ago. I met this guy by the name of Simon Sinek. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard of him, but I actually had the privilege of meeting him before he even wrote his first book. And I worked with him I worked with him individually, and he helped me figure out my why. And it took me 2 years to figure out what my quote unquote why is. And it's just two words. My purpose on the planet, my purpose in business, and my purpose in life overall is to do one thing, and that's improve lives. So I was very fortunate before he was quote unquote TED Talk Simon Sinek or quote unquote guru Simon Sinek. I actually worked with him individually, and it took him 2 years to help me figure that out. And I'm very glad he did, because it changed the course of my life.
That is amazing. First of all, I love, absolutely love his TEDx talk. Start with why.
Yeah.
Because being in the Air Force, as soon as they started talking about powered man flight, I was like, all right, you got my attention. And he told two incredible stories, the Wright brothers and the other guy who nobody knows about.
Yep.
And he talked about I have a dream speech, which I thought was incredible. And when he talked about those two things, I remember what he was saying about them is like, you know, they weren't qualified. They weren't special. They weren't, you know, whatever, but their words had meaning and they had a why. It was a movement and it was, you know, all that stuff. There's another guy who I absolutely love. And he's Mark Sanborn. Do you know who Mark Sanborn is?
I have not. I'm going to write him down and check him out.
Mark Sanborn has a course and a book called You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader. That's what it's called.
And that's actually very true.
And absolutely. And one of the parts of it, he talks about Abraham Lincoln. He said that Abraham Lincoln was not even the keynote speaker at the Gettysburg Address. He wasn't even the guy. He was just there. He was going to give his address, and then he had other things to do. The guy who was the actual keynote speaker, his name was Edward Everett, and he was the Secretary of State at the time, and he spoke for 2 hours. Abraham Lincoln spoke for less than 2 minutes, and he's memorialized as the Gettysburg Address, one of the greatest speeches ever written. But a guy who nobody knows, named Edward Everett, was the Secretary of State and spoke for over 2 hours at the same event, and nobody even knows who that guy is. Isn't that incredible?
That is absolutely amazing, and it goes to the point that you're of the power of words, and I think it even goes bigger than that, like Sinek talks about. It is, what is our intention versus our expectation? Where do we, as leaders, entrepreneurs, job seekers, where do we want to end up, and who do we want to impact? And that doesn't come from always a strategic vision of making the best product or being the best of this or the best. It's being a greatest service often to others.
100%. One of the core values inside the Air Force is service before self. We must serve others. And I'm kind of upper, like I'm an E6. So I've been in a while. I know what I'm doing. I got 2 years before retirement. Should be into the upper echelon of leadership in the top three. But one thing that's different between those that I lead, or I say that I serve, and those at the top, is the ones at the bottom think that I'm nobody, I can't lead anybody. I tell them, you don't need a title to be a leader. The ones at the top think that they make all the decisions and they are in charge and they make it happen. And I think it's reversed. I always talk to the young guys about, you don't need a title to be a leader. You don't need to effectively be a supervisor or lead a team in order to have influence. You just need to do the best you can and lead by example and live by example. And I tell the ones at the top, I said, you do not make the decision happen. Your airmen, your E1, 2, E3, E4, those guys, the young guys, that's who's making the mission. You're not there turning wrenches. You're in the office answering phones and sending paperwork. You're not out there for 12, 13 hours a day in the rain, sleet, and snow. You're telling them what to do, and they go and do it. You're not out there. They are. So you serve them. They don't serve you. You serve them. And so you need to make sure they have everything they need. Make sure they're quality trained. Make sure they're smart enough to do the job. Make sure they have everything that they need to make sure that the mission happens. Because you don't make the mission happen. They're out there turning the wrenches and making it happen. Your job is to develop them into the best that they can be. That's the difference.
I could not agree with you more. I've often said to the clients that I work with through my practice here at Extraordinary Advisors, the number one job of any leader or any CEO or any entrepreneur is to remove bottlenecks for the people doing the work that are of service to that organization. It's not his number one job to make the most money or to get the most attention or to drive his or her agenda. Their job is to be of service to people so that the organization flourishes, not just the entrepreneur or not just the CEO.
100%. Yep, absolutely. And I've never been, I don't know, maybe I will, maybe I won't. I'm not sure. I hope so, but I've never been on any of the Inc. lists, Forbes list, you know, 30 under 30, 40 under 40. I've never, you know, ran multi-million dollar companies, whatever. But for the past 18 years, I've been on active duty military orders in the Air Force. So it's given me a little bit of perspective as far as building teams, leading teams. I mean, we're leading people into war, you know, like
sure.
This is like life or death stuff, you know, and we're dealing with people every day. Yeah, we're dealing with machines and airplanes and things, but we're dealing with people. And the one constant is that younger people never feel valued, and the older crowd always thinks the younger people are entitled. It's almost every single generation. When I came in, they're like, man, you guys don't know nothing. And the older generation always talks bad about us. And the younger generation, the dinosaurs need to go away and retire. You know, so it's like
that doesn't change. Yeah. It, when you come to the private sector either, I think it's really interesting, especially as we go through now is we've got, you know, 4 or 5 generations now working at a company or being part of an organization, all those different nuances come into play. But before we go on to that, I do want to make sure that myself and I'm going to speak on behalf of your listeners is we want to thank you for your service to our country, because most of us couldn't do what we do if it wasn't for folks like you.
Oh, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that.
You're very welcome. And I think it's something that to be of service, to be of selfless service, as many of our military professionals are, is so lost on so many people. And it's so important as we focus on what is it, well, not only what is our why for the individual, but what is our why for our organization? I know Cynic does a lot of work with the military because I think the people that are there to hear him talk about it are very why driven. And that why is usually not within them, but it's again, that service to others and to creating that safe environment for their fellow man.
Oh, 100%. Yep. Absolutely. So the show is, I mean, we're already off to an amazing start, but the show is about a transformational moment, or two transformational moments that really put you on the path to what you're doing today. A lot of times we find out that sexual assault survivors become advocates for those that have just been assaulted. Or we find that, you know, people who have tried to commit suicide then become suicide awareness trainers. They do a lot of work with veterans, people who are battling that. There are, you know, people that go through a moment in time and then take that moment and use it as fuel to kind of be in that same line of work. So is that what happened with you? Is that true with you? What was the transformational moment that you believe was the catalyst to put you on the path to what you're doing today?
Well, I think there are really two moments. And the first one happened to me, believe it or not, when I was 5 years old. When I was 5 years old, I lost my father. He passed away. He was 45. I was 5. And that created a great sense of self-resiliency within me. My family became very scattered across the country. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. She returned to work. My brother went to university. My sister moved from Detroit, Michigan to Tucson, Arizona. And as a 5-year-old kid, you're very wondering what the heck's going on. very much feeling a sense of abandonment and even a sense of rejection from the world. Move that forward to when I'm 22 years old. I just had a whimsical marriage had just ended, and I'd fought very hard for a 3-year period to get custody of my son, and I chose to be a single dad. So that having lost my father focused me on being a father to my child. That point on, I realized that I could not be a quote unquote great employee because my first priority was to be a quote unquote great father. Through that process of discovery, I realized over the next 4 years, the best way for me to be a great father was to become an entrepreneur and start my own business. So I started my own business when I was 27 years old for more of what would now be seen as a millennial thought process, freedom and flexibility to spend time with my child. What turned into is a crazy journey for the first 9 years of making money and losing money and getting away from some of my core thought processes and becoming very much invested in the work, very much invested in growing the business, but not having a lot of sense of direction. Just more, I'm just gonna always outwork. My resiliency is always gonna drive me forward to the point of nearly burning out. So by 2006, my business had been around for almost a decade. I was then $600,000 in debt. I was 60 days away from running out of all of my money, losing my house that my child was growing up in. And I literally walked in September 9th of that year and fired all of my employees and I started over. Through that journey.
Hold on. You walked in and fired everybody, literally fired everybody.
I fired everybody because we had a toxic culture. We had massive dysfunction. I hired a coach without having any money. It's like to hear these stories of these actors who don't have two nickels to rub together who are always attending acting classes. I was so determined to be successful that I finally realized I needed to reach out and ask for help, push my imposter syndrome aside, deal with my crap in order to get crap done in my company. From that point forward, then we went on to make the Inc. 5000 six of the next 7 years as one of America's fastest growing, most successful companies. To now where I work with Extraordinary Advisors. I've retired from the recruiting company. Now with Extraordinary Advisors, right. I do the same thing that my coach did for me but through a lot of experience share and mindset shifting so that someone doesn't need to suffer like I suffered with imposter syndrome. Someone doesn't need to suffer with fear and self-doubt like I suffered, and I can hopefully help prevent some of the pain that I experienced before I move this needle forward for myself and my family.
Holy smokes. I mean, I've built 4 businesses, but I've never just walked in and be like, we're done. You're fired. You know, like kind of freaked me out a little bit, but I'm glad it worked out and it seemed like that's what needed to happen. And, you know, I've heard of people, I come from an entrepreneur family, and I've heard of people trying to burn it down so that you can rebuild it. I have heard of that,
sure.
But I guess I never realized what it would take. Like actually, like everybody, goodbye. Very cool.
Don't go away mad. Just go away. It really very much, as I look back and I've spent time now, and this is, again, this is 2006. It's been a little bit of time. It's very much, I think, like someone with a substance issue hitting bottom. I recognized I needed help. I got that help. The person helping me pointed out the things I was doing well, point out things that I needed to improve upon, put me on a track to do that. And I realized in order for me to do the things that I needed to do, I needed to replace the team that I had. So now when I go into a company and I'm working with the CEO or the entrepreneur, I'll talk to them and I'll express to them, listen, you've got 10 people on your leadership team. Now that you've brought me in, there's going to be change. And it's going to be the change that's going to tie to your why. It's going to tie to your purpose and passion and the life you want to create by design. That is going to rub some people the wrong way. In that process, some of these people will either self-select out of the leadership team or some of them will need to be removed by you from the team. But inevitably, there will be turnover on the leadership team when you bring in an outside party like myself.
Wow. Blown away, man. Very, very cool. That was like a holy crap moment.
asked me what a transformational situation it was. I didn't want to take the question lightly because it's important, man. I think, for people listening today to realize that when you see something like, you know, somebody's been on the Inc. 5000 6 times, Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, it must have been super easy. It must have just been, you know, a rocket ship to the stars. The reality is there was a lot of mistakes along the way. There was a lot of failing forward that I needed to do. There was a lot of growth as a leader that I needed to undertake in order to have that quote unquote success. And the reality is that success only happened once I turned over the team, got the right people in place. I became a servant leader to them. I got them going in the right direction, but removing their bottlenecks, trying a bunch of different things, and recognizing that for me to be great for them, I needed to get my act together. To get my act together, I needed a coach so I could coach my team. So it's a very much a reciprocal symbiotic relationship behind the scenes.
Amazing. The Inc. 5000 list, I pulled it up, and it says must be privately owned in the United States, have started earning revenue by March 31st, 2015, had revenue no less than $100,000 in 2015, had revenue no less than $2 million in 2018. Revenue in 2018 must exceed the revenue from 2015, and that qualifies you and is eligible to be on the Inc. 5000 or to be looked at as a possible Inc. 5000 nominee list, you know, winner, whatever you want to call it. And I'm looking at this, I'm like, had no revenue less than $100,000. I'm like, awesome, nailed it. Revenue no less than $2 million. Ah, crap. like, damn it. I was getting excited. I was like, shit, I made it. But yeah, $2 million, man. Man, I just, congratulations, man. Six times, oh. 5,000. Absolutely incredible, man. It's no small feat by any measure.
Well, thank you very much. And it's something that certainly the team I had in place at the time, we did it all together. And these people really we're all focused on a common goal, just like in the military. We have to be focused on a common entity, a common enemy, or a common goal. And the crazy thing about it is when you're going through that massive growth period, and it's always in the Inc. 5000 process, it's a 3-year running trail. So essentially for about a 12-year period, we were growing so fast, the fear was we were going to grow out of business versus go out of business, and we were going to exceed our capacities. And so there was a lot of pivoting and changing through the course of that time frame. Mind you, if we didn't have that growth rate, I couldn't have paid the $600,000 in debt that I had, which I did, which by far is still my proudest moment, is to satisfy my debtors and my vendors and my bank who trusted and believed in me. But it's that ability then to recognize that as the leader, like we talked about earlier, it wasn't about me. It was about these people who believed in the vision we set forward, plugged into my confidence in them, just like my clients do now. It's like, I believe in my clients sometimes more than they believe in themselves. And that's what we sometimes have to do for the people that we serve is they have to plug into our confidence, just like our kids have to plug into our confidence. And it's such a unique thing to be able to be of such great service to so many, but often in very different ways.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. One question that I don't know why I was thinking about this, that I don't really ask a lot of questions on the show. $600,000 in debt. Do you advise people to take debt, to leverage debt for their business? You got Dave Ramsey who says debt is dumb, cash is king. And you got Grant Cardone who says you're stupid if you don't have debt. So like, what's the, like, is there like a right or wrong answer? I mean, 600,000, yeah. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. You're telling
that's
me.
A lot of money.
It was all personally guaranteed as well. So so this is going back to what I didn't know. When I started the business in 1997, the United States was in a great spot. There were like today, there were more jobs than there were people. So I was very quickly able to get up and running and become profitable. What I didn't know, and my ignorance came into play, my lack of experience came into play as a 30-year-old entrepreneur, is I didn't know how to manage my cash appropriately. I didn't know how to do the finance of the business appropriately. I treated it almost like a checkbook business. Now, when I work with my clients who want to go into debt, that it has to be debt focused on growth, debt focused on different things, where I was sometimes using the debt to cover the losses. And that was my mistake, my ignorance in the process. Combined with, in 06, people, when you go back to 08, 09, 2010, that's when the country was in a recession. In the staffing space, we knew that the country was going to be in a recession in 2006, 2007, 2008. because people were laying off a bunch of people. They weren't bringing on contingent workforce. The model for my business at the time was temporary help. And there was a bit, there was a big downturn in that sector. It was like a leading economic indicator for an oncoming recession. So what
wow.
I did is I had clients. So what happened to us is we had clients that we extended credit to too long. Those clients went bankrupt, and over half of that $600,000 in debt was unpaid invoices that we had fronted the payroll, fronted the workers' comp, and fronted the taxes on.
Mm.
So it wasn't a strategic decision to go 600K in debt. It was thrust upon, half of it was thrust upon us by clients, I would say, are acting unethical, shuttling us in bankruptcy because we weren't considered wages. And then boom, just starting over the next week with a new vendor. And it gave me a very, very unique perspective on business ethics. I'll tell you that much.
Right. Like lesson learned. Outstanding.
So the lesson learned though was to make cash king, to make profit first, not revenue first, to compress our payment terms and put margin over revenue over everything else. Because if we hadn't made that pivot and we'd just redone the same model, we would have crashed and burned.
I've done that in my first business. Something you said, and I my heart started beating out of my chest as soon as you said these three words. Profit over revenue. I was like, as soon as you were started and you said that, I was like, huh, like that's deep for me, because I built my first business. It was an entertainment company. And I was like, look at me. Like, I got all this revenue coming in. Like, this is amazing. But it's like not prop. Like, my costs were so astronomically high. Like, my overhead, like, I wrecked my own self and didn't even realize it. I'm like, look at me. I got all this money coming in. But, like, I couldn't even live off of it because I didn't have profit. I had revenue, like, great revenue. But the costs were so high to do business. It was ridiculous. I couldn't even literally. Yeah, the profit was just not there. So when you said profit over revenue, I was like, oh, I learned that one the hard way.
Me too, my friend. I totally feel your pain on that one. And in the staffing space, it happens. But it's crazy because now that I'm advising a lot of business owners, they still get wrapped up in that I've got to grow my revenue. So I just had a client, an amazing entrepreneur, a visionary in his space. I mean, I don't use those words lightly. He's really a pioneer. And when I first started working with him, I said, well, what are your goals? He laid out his goals. And his goal was, I want to make more money because I'm working my butt off. And I said, well, how do you think you're going to do that? Well, I'm just going to double my revenue. And once we took a dive into his margins, I said, you know what? Would you be open to adjusting your margins and fixing a couple of different tweaks here, moving a couple of needles here? And within a year, not only did he improve his margins by a factor of not 4X, but 5x margin potential, he also increased his revenue by 70%. And it didn't come into play until he decided, I'm going to look at my business differently. And I don't know how to look at my business differently. I need to bring in an outside resource to help me do that. And now he not only is making more money, has more revenue. Now we've tied into his, going back to your original question of why, he now works his business for his why. The guy is literally loving his business because he's loving life. And oh, by the way, he's a pioneer in his industry and his creativity is off the charts. And he's making more money than he's ever made in his entire life.
Absolutely incredible. And that's what it is. You know, I learned what not to do. And I look back on those things. I'm like, let's hope we don't do that again. You know, and it's funny because you don't actually see it when you're in it. You have to step away. It's when you sell it, when you hire somebody, when you get away from everything that you're doing and you really look at it from a different angle and you're like, oh, now I see it. Like, didn't know that. I mean, you know, you don't know what you don't know, but man, it really hits you hard when you start figuring it out and you're like, wow, I honestly didn't know that. Or wow, I didn't see that coming. Or didn't know that that's, didn't know that that was actually taking place. You know, so. Yeah, that's tough. So talk about the job search process. I'm fascinated that, you know, I always have entrepreneurs, I have, you know, podcasters and authors and everybody, but there's not like, I mean, there's a bunch of books like How to Write a Resume or, you know, Get the Perfect Client or Pick the Perfect Career, like things like that. there's a book that I absolutely love by Michael Port called Steal the Show, and it's how to nail interviews. Yours is just different.
Yours is completely different
than anything I've seen.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It actually came from being involved with young people looking for jobs when I was speaking at high schools or colleges. After we made the Ink List, people wanted us to come and share our experience and share the method of success. When I'm talking to the kids afterwards, I was amazed at how many of them did not know how to find a job. And these are kids who are going to, you know, Big Ten universities, large universities, and they just didn't know how to do it. And it was frustrating for me because at the same time, I had a child at university. And, you know, as a parent, my position with the universities were I'm paying the tuition to educate my child so he or she can have a better life, a better career. It's essentially job training through university methodology. And I was on the board of a university, and I'm talking to the dean and the president, and the university saw it so differently. They saw it as that they're in the education business, not in the job readiness business. And that just lit me up. I said, you're working with young people. These young people need to understand how to find a job, either out of high school or out of college. It doesn't really matter. And they have debt and they have goals and they have dreams and aspirations. We've got to help them. So the book was born out of my why of wanting to improve lives and applying my knowledge as a recruiter. You know, at the time, I think it was 15 or 16 years to people who didn't understand how to find a job, because people don't realize that 80% of jobs are never listed anywhere. And the best way to get a job is, and the best way to get a job is to be, we call them one of one or one of two. So if you've got a job, your intake person, your hiring manager, or your HR person is going to collect resumes, and they're going to collect data points, and they're going to bring people in for interviews, and they're going to bring 10 people in to fill one job in an ideal world. Well, if you're the first person who contacted the company using the methodology we taught, and you're one of one and you kill the interview, they're not even going to bother to post an ad. They're just going to hire you. Why? Because it's easy. People are by and large often lazy and they want the path of least resistance. So let's create that ability for you to do that as a person. So really the book was really designed to take what we did as recruiters, really make it generic for people who are getting out of high school or getting out of college to go find their first job. And then once they learn that basic skill, they can just use it over and over and over again as they change careers, because the average person changes careers, not just jobs, 7 to 8 times over the course of their lifetime. So this is a skill not being really taught well at university or high schools that people do have to use throughout the course of their lifetime.
I'm absolutely blown away. When you said 80% of the jobs, something like, I think it was about 80% or something, are not even posted. I'm like, wait a minute. Indeed, Monster.com, Recruiter, Glassdoor. I mean, there's a ton of jobs that are posted on these sites. And then if I hear you right, some jobs aren't even posted. I'm like, God, I wonder what that number is. Cause I already look, I'm like, there's a ton of jobs, LinkedIn jobs. Like there's already a bunch of jobs posted. Doesn't mean that they're actually hiring, but it's just, they're posted. I can't even imagine what that number would be that are actually not posted, that they've either hired somebody that I don't know, the company knows, like I know of a guy, hey, my brother, my cousin, I know a guy that I'm friends with, you know, whatever. And they've hired with him, like, you know, Steve from this company or this department, whatever, bring him over and fill that position. And so they've kind of filled internally. That seems like a big number.
Well, the reality is this: if you've got 20 jobs posted on Indeed, there's another 80 jobs that haven't been posted, and it's always been that way. Because I go back to the CEOs that I work with, and I say to CEOs, I said, "What's your number one problem in business?" And 9 out of 10 of them saying, "I can't find good people." Well, all right, well, where are you looking? Well, I'm looking on Indeed. I'm looking here. I'm looking there. I said, "Great, I understand all that. Do you realize what the number one source for your next great hire?" Typically they don't. I said, it's your current staff. So I teach job seekers how to find jobs, and I teach CEOs how to find great job seekers without having to necessarily post online. There's nothing wrong with posting online. As a recruiting company, I've used Monster and Indeed forever. Nothing wrong with that. But the fact of the matter is, if you're able to get the great employee, you're able to connect with that person, and you don't have to post an ad or, you know, essentially, I'm taking my, you know, my recruiting people out of business. But if you don't have to use a recruiter, you can find them on your own. You're better off. You're doing it that way. But the flip, the, right. the overall caveat that completely destroys both sides of it goes back to the leadership team. It goes back to the hiring manager, the CEO, the entrepreneur, whoever. Because the number one reason somebody quits a job isn't for money, isn't for drive
right.
distance, isn't for
100%.
Work. It's for the person. They quit because they don't want to work for the company or the person they work for any longer.
100%.
And CEOs hate that. It just boggles their mind because they go back to what we talked about earlier, the five generations working in a company. So you get the 55-year-old CEO and the 20-year-old entry-level person. He doesn't appreciate me. He doesn't understand. He should earn his way like I had to earn my way. And the 20-year-old saying, listen, there are 600,000 to a million job openings every day. I don't need your garbage. And I'm just going to go find another job where I'm going to feel appreciated.
Right. So I go into different companies and do leadership from, here's what happens. Not really a CEO, but like the VP of marketing or the VP of sales is usually one of those two.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to them and like, man, we got a retention problem. We got a retention problem. And automatically I'm like, I know exactly what the problem is. It's you, not them. It's like if you have a retention problem, it's not them. It's the leadership. Attitude will alter leadership. And I don't believe that there is a retention problem in any – it doesn't exist. People – it's a byproduct. It's a result. People are not leaving jobs they love. They're leaving jobs they hate. Or they're leaving – like you said, they're leaving jobs because they don't want to work for the CEO, the boss, that whoever. Like, this is not worth the time. Screw this, dude. And leave. Now they love their career or the job that they're doing, but they find it somewhere else in a much happier place. So it's not that they don't love their doing. It's usually the people.
It's normally the people. And the crazy thing that and I do a lot of work with manufacturing. My main business is at Diversified Industrial Staffing. Is we placed skilled trades professionals in a manufacturing state. Welders, machinists, things like that. And those guys do have to show up at a physical location to do their trade and their skill, and I understand that. What CEOs are really going to have to deal with is the gig economy and freelancer nation, because millennials, every survey shows this, they're willing to work for less money for freedom and flexibility. They're willing to work for less money for an employer who includes them in decision-making conversations. Now, employers get messed up because they think, well, the millennials want to run the company. No, they want to be heard. And think about most of the millennials we deal with nowadays in our country played team sports. They didn't play individual sports. So in those team sports, at the end of every game or at the end of every season, everybody got a trophy. Everybody got a Rice Krispie treat and a juice box, and they were sent on their way, and they were all made to feel inclusive. We have to take that mentality in business. We have to include them.
Yep.
They just want to be heard. They're not narcissistically, egotistically driven to think that only their voice counts and only their opinion matters, but they want to have a contribution. And the reality is, if you're not including them in the conversation, they'll find somebody who is.
Yep. 100%. You're 100% right. And I talk to these, you know, to the young guys coming into the military, you know, and they don't care about that leader. They're like, you got to do what I say because I outrank you. And they will. And they'll do it just enough to not get in trouble. They'll work just hard enough. They'll work just close enough to where they got to go to really not get in trouble. And they don't understand why they're not putting forth their best effort. This isn't your best. They're not going to do their best. Listen, commitment is what it comes down to. They're not going to commit. Number one, isn't relevant. And two, they don't have their buy-in. If you want to make a positive impact difference in the lives of your people, you have to have the buy-in. You get the buy-in by including everybody. You get the buy-in by being relevant. And because it's not the young person's job to care about the company like you do. It goes to what we were talking about. Leaders need to be serving the people that are working for them, making sure they have everything. Need, make that they feel valued, making sure they feel included. And it's and I tell them all, and just don't want to listen. I tell them all the time. I'm like, these airmen, they do not care about what you care about, period. The end. They just don't care. What they care about is making an impact. They care about the bigger picture. The leaders care about the bottom line, bottom dollar. They're chasing stats. That's not what the airmen care about. Airmen don't care about numbers and stats. They care about, did I do a good enough job, and did somebody pat me on the back, period.
It's amazing how much you can motivate or inspire, not even motivate, inspire someone by giving them a point of recognition, really seeing them and working with them in how they see the world. I was really fortunate a couple of weeks ago. I got a chance to go to California and work in a maximum security prison for 2 days, teaching in leadership to people who are in, I mean, maximum security prison. Some of these people are never going to get out. And the number one, two of their biggest challenges were the environments they grew up in and the way they were communicated with and connected with by the adults in their space. And so many of them now believe as you know, adult men, had they been treated differently as young people, they have made different choices that may have not landed them behind bars for the rest of their lives. And it was such a powerful thing, what they taught me and how we as people in our society, we as leaders, like you said earlier, leadership doesn't have a title. Leadership is a behavior. And right. there are titled leaders, manager. You can manage people or you can lead people. And, you know, one of my favorite movies to talk to, and I was talking to some of the they call them mavericks in these incarcerated individuals, is, you know, look at something like the classic movie Saving Private Ryan. We have a reluctant leader in Tom Hanks who's not much older than these people he's leading. He was a teacher back in the real world, and he's having to lead them through very difficult times with several humanistic traits and caring traits in helping these individuals. And here these people who, again, who really are looking for that second chance, just wanting to be seen as people, not be seen as an incarcerated individual. No different than a millennial wants to be seen as another human being, not as a millennial. We put so many labels on people that sometimes the labels don't serve us well, and rarely do those labels serve the people we've labeled.
Right. That's a good point. That's a good point. Outstanding. Life Transformation Radio listeners, if you're listening, the phone number to call is 657-383-1109. If you have a question for Todd or myself, give us a call at 657-383-1109. So, Todd, what can we do, man? The job search process, obviously, I want everybody to go to extraordinaryadvisors.com and check out job search process book and what you have to offer as far as programs, products, and services. But what should people be doing? You know, is it do we find job that we would love to do, or do we just settle until we can really find it? Or what is your advice for the young people or even the older people who are like, I really haven't found my thing. What's my thing?
You know, it's a great question. I think part of the challenge, and it's so crazy that you say that about employees, because I run into the same crazy thing with CEOs. I often say to the CEO, what do you want your life by design to look like? And this is the CEO of the company. What do you want? What is your ideal job within your business? You're the founder. You're doing well. And they often say, well, I just want to make more money. I'm a capitalist. I have no problem with that. I can teach you that in my sleep.
Right.
We're going to be fine there. But if we don't have a purpose and a passion, and we can't figure out what the purpose and passion is of the CEO, or replace CEO with employee, what is our purpose and passion in life? What is the mission statement for the business? What is the mission statement in your career? And what is the gap between those two? Because inevitably there will be a gap. And how do we close that gap? You're not going to attain a level of life satisfaction. Because really all you do as an employee is no different than what you do as an entrepreneur. You're trading one set of problems for another. So if you're a CEO and you want to get more revenue, okay, that's a problem. I need more revenue. Great, let's attack that problem. Let's figure out how to do that. Well, you have to get more customers. Great, I've solved the problem. I got more revenue. Well, the new problem you have is now you have to make sure you deliver your product or service in the timely fashion which you committed. So that's a new problem. All you've done is created one problem for another. As an employee, until you figure out what drives you, what the purpose and passion is, it's very difficult. Where I was working with a young man the other day, and he's in the accounting space, and he doesn't like tax season, which is real. I said to him, I said, well, why'd you become an accountant? Because that's where everybody starts in tax, getting into work through that. But what I found out was that he really believes that saving money and creating that ability to have savings will allow anyone to be able to have a better life. Not necessarily, you know, to jet set around the globe, but to maybe have another vacation or to maybe not work so hard. And he has this real core belief that people should work for the enjoyment of work, but not work themselves to death. So as we're helping him with his job search, I said, maybe it would be valuable for you to consider what drives you. And he goes, I want to work for a company, work for an entity that gives back to the community and is able to make an impact in the world. I said, oh, have you heard of conscious capitalism? He had not. Now we designed a whole job search with looking for conscious capitalism type thinking companies that will appeal to his why. And all he's going to do is apply his excellent accounting skills to that company versus, well, I'm just going to move from one accounting firm to another, to another, to another, to another. He's not going to be happy. Same thing I'd say to anybody listening today. If you know that you have a purpose and a passion for doing a certain thing, well, how do you apply the skills and the abilities you have to that, to a company that's going to embody those? And if you're an employer, then how do you promote the heck out of what you believe in so you gravitate people towards you? Look at Zappos. They're in Henderson, Nevada. They're the first company in the United States to go from $0 to $1 billion in less than 10 years, and to do it all on culture. They sell shoes online. This isn't brain surgery. But they've got people working for them. And I spent time with Tony. They've got people working for him who actually work for less percentage-wise than their competitor because they want to be part of a bigger picture. Tony's inspired them to make a bigger difference.
And different generations believed in different things. They were raised different. My parenting, and this is, you know, something that I'm sure my whole thing about parenting is this. However you're raised, were probably something that you hated, or there was something about it. I don't know. Maybe you got paddled. Maybe you got put in the corner. I don't know, whatever it was. And you said at one point in your life, I'm never doing that to my child. And maybe you followed through on that promise. Now you have a child wondering what the heck happened. Well, your parenting happened. Generations change is you hated a certain way you were parented. You chose to parent yourself a different way. And the outcome of your parenting was different than the outcome of your life. There'd be good, bad, or different, whatever. So the things that this generation cares about was a byproduct of the way that you parented based on the way that you were parented. If that makes any sense.
For sure. And it's so interesting because so many people will say that I don't want to do to others what was done to me. And the psychology is so right out there saying what was done to you is how you will behave unless you change your mindset and you put in measurable differences in how you conduct yourself based upon the measurable differences in how you think. And it's crazy. I spend more time as a coach working with the mindset of the entrepreneurs, getting rid of the stinking thinking in their head and their self-criticism and their self-issues so that, again, I help – it says in the intro, you know, my job is to help CEOs and entrepreneurs get things done in their head first and in their business second. If I don't get them good with themselves, they're not able to be good with that. And I always speak from experience, not from lecture, because – I had to do the same darn thing. I had to do the same thing. Or again, I would have gone out of business, lost my house. My kid and I would have been on the street. That's not a happy ending.
Right. Yeah. I was to speak in Colorado Springs, and I brought my wife, and I usually try to bring my kids and my wife and, you know, all my speaking engagements. But, you know, I said, wife, we're just going to go. She loves Colorado. It's in March. I said, we'll just go you and I. So I get there and, you know, they're supposed to pay for all the travel expenses and all that stuff. I'm like, yeah, cool. Waiting for us at the airport was a BMW 400 series. Number one, I didn't even know that BMW made a 400 series. And number two, I had no idea how to start the car. So I'm literally like, I stopped, I created a video, and I said, Facebook, the world, you want to know what a broke mindset looks like? It looks like me. You look at me and you see somebody successful, but a broke mindset looks at this car, says this. And then I showed them the car, turned the camera on. I says, I have no idea how to drive or start this particular vehicle. And so everybody's laughing. They're like, what? That's an awesome car. What? I was like, I literally have no idea how to start this car. You know? So the parking attendant came over and showed me how to start the car. Because I'm like, where's the key? Where's the, like, where's the, he's like, it's push button. You got to push the brake, hold this button. I'm like, this is complicated as hell. And then I get to the hotel, and it was like a Renaissance or something like that. And I was like, what floor are we on? Where's our room? And then I always wanted to know what was behind the double door of the hotel. Well, now I do. Because our hotel room had that double door where you unlock one, unlock boom, and then they open. And I'm like, this is incredible. Dining room, living room, little bitty kitchen, making rooms in the bathroom, huge view. I'm like, this is insane. I was like, I don't need this, but I would have done it. And I'm like, you hide your face. This is incredible. And so, I mean, I'm like, that was incredible. This place is absolutely insane. And I was like, I don't need this. Like, I'm totally freaking fine with a double bed or like maybe one king. Like, I'm totally comfortable. This place was amazingly huge. And the people that booked me, I'm like, you did not have to do that. That was too much. That was amazing. She goes, no, you deserve it. My wife's like, hey. it was almost like I was knocking myself down, you know. But it that was the moment where I was like, wait, broke thinking, money or success or whatever you want to call it, positive thinking, broke thinking, positive thinking. Got it. And I swear 2 years ago, that was a breakthrough. And ever since then, I just, not like egotistically, but I just expected, like, I'm going to be successful. I'm going to make it here. I'm going to reach my next milestone. And it just fuels me. That moment was the transformation moment. My mind instantly shifted from broke and poverty mindset to positive, successful mindset.
Well, I love it. I work with a lot of people who have what we, it's kind of a similar, it's a limiting thought process. And I say, well, what if we took, you know, let's always have to acknowledge people in their limited thought process because it's very real for them. But what if, just with kind of the what if question, what if there were no limitations? What if there was only abundance and not scarcity? What if we were able to, and what would that look like to you? And as I start telling the story of what abundance looks like, it's not crazy stuff. It's not trips and yachts and everything else. It's like, well, you know, what I really like to do is I'd like to be able to, you know, I had one person say this to me. What I really want to do this year is I want to be able to take my kids school shopping not at a resale shop. I want to take my kids shopping at the mall. That was what abundance looked like to this single mom. And once we were able to anchor her into her vision of what a successful shopping trip for school looked like, changed everything, changed how she worked, changed how she acted. But most importantly, it changed how she talked about herself and changed how she talked about her world to other people. And within very short period of time, she was not only shopping at the mall, she was shopping at the high-end stores in the mall because she was able to see that the world wasn't beating her down. The world wasn't about scarcity. There was abundance in there. She just had to look for it differently.
There you go. I love it. Hey, man, as we start to close the show, we're going to do a shameless plug. You can plug your websites, programs, products, services, whatever it is that you want the audience to know and to do. Shamelessly plug. Go.
Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to anchor in on my why, and my why is to improve lives. So first of all, I'm very grateful, and I thank you for having me on your show today. And part of my thank you process is to offer to anybody who's listening today, I'm happy to give anybody who writes to me at extraordinaryadvisors.com on the contact us page, I'm happy to give you 30 minutes of my time for free, and we can talk about anything you want. We can talk about your CEO journey, your entrepreneurial journey. We can talk about how you need to, you know, you're looking to find a different job or a different career, and just talk about maybe some things that are holding you back and how you want to create a life by design and how you want to move, like we've just talked about, from maybe scarcity into abundance. Because and the reason I offer that is there's so many people through the course of my lifetime who've given me so much, who've been leaders in my life, been mentors to me and coaches to me. This gives me a chance to honor those relationships by giving to people in your audience today.
Outstanding, man. I really, really appreciate that. Go to extraordinaryadvisors.com, go to the contact us page, and get that coaching. Amazing, amazing stuff. Go to Facebook, LinkedIn, in the show notes, the link's right there. Contact Todd. Tell him that you heard him on Life Transformation Radio. As we close the show, Todd, give us one nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action today.
I think one of the biggest things that I had to learn was that happiness is a myth and satisfaction is a lifestyle. What I mean by that is I was the coach that I currently use. I still use a coach, and he and I had an argument one time about why am I not happier because I've been using you and I've been investing in you in our time together. And his statement was very simple. He goes, happiness is a spike of dopamine and satisfaction is a journey that can create transformative change. So for people that are seeking the happiness and seeking all those things, happiness in a moment is great. Have a bite of chocolate. Watch a movie. Those are happy experiences. But if you want to have a true, sustainable life of success, it's the journey of satisfaction. It is the hero's journey. There's going to be highs and there's going to be no's. There's going to be ups and there's going to be downs. But if you can recognize that that's part of the journey and that all you're going to do is trade one set of problems for another, and the ability to recognize that it's not just the finish line, but the journey that is the joy, I think you could transform your life.
Perfect. There you go. I've heard it said that you must be content now in order to be satisfied later. If you're not happy and content now, then you cannot be satisfied where you want to become because you're always going to be held back. I can't remember where I heard that, read it in a book or heard it somewhere, but that's kind of always stuck with me. I'm like, am I happy right now? Am I content? Because am I really, like, I don't need to be satisfied. I don't need to be, like, kicking my feet up going, haha, look at me. Really, like, am I content now? And if I'm not, then I need to do something to get there.
Well,
I really want to be satisfied later.
It's so interesting you say that because it's the action that occurs first, not the motivation. People think I have to be motivated to take action.
Right.
It's the reverse that works. You have to take the action. From the result of your action, more motivation will be derived.
100%. Absolutely, man. Todd, you're a rock star, man. I appreciate you coming on the show. It's been amazing. And, man, I got a lot out of this. Thank you so much.
Sean, it was a privilege to be on your program. Thank you for having me.
Life Transformation Radio listeners, if anything resonated with you from Todd's and my conversation, please connect with Todd Palmer and tell him that you heard his episode on Life Transformation Radio. Go to extraordinaryadvisors.com and go to the contact page. Connect with him. See what he has to offer. Go and look up the job search process, find and land a great job in 6 weeks or less, and then read More Sales, More Profits, More Partnerships. And with that, I close the show by saying, live your brand. Find an opportunity today to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.